Okay, so I've made my way down to Brighton from Norfolk for a very important meeting with Chief Inspector Paul Betts and PC Stephanie Franks of the liaison team here at Sussex Constabulary. First of all, thanks for speaking to me. Let's talk about what we read on Twitter. If I can just pull up the information that's prompted this meeting today. People are asking about Stephanie, if I can just come to you, because I believe it was it you that sort of that's replied to me on Twitter.
Yeah.
People would like to know where the info from Dialogue and Communications is recorded, retained, and who has access.
Yeah. For the people that I've been speaking to, I saved their contacts in Outlook,
right?
Just so I've got them quickly, readily accessible. Mm-hmm. It's my own Outlook account, so.
Right.
That's where most of the contacts get hold, or in my mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the dialogue goes, it's not ever recorded like word for word what is said, but for operations we tend to put them onto SIF forms, mm-hmm. which are locked to just the PLOs working on that day.
Right.
That will also be Chief Inspector have access to it, or whichever command team, so the silver, the bronze, mm-hmm. whoever needs to know. So they're kind of restricted documents, and that will be like a diary, a day-by-day event of who I've tried to contact, who I've spoken to, and whether they're willing to engage or they're not willing to engage.
Okay.
I mean, I think we recognise there's an element of uncertainty from people, you know, in the protest environment, and I don't want to use the word fear because I think that's a little bit extreme, but people... have this uncertainty around what the PLO is there for, what they're trying to achieve, and are they, you know, there just to gather information on us secretly, etc. And I can say hand on heart, that's not what their objectives are. You know, their objectives are to speak to people, to have that open two-way dialogue, and ultimately to facilitate their protest. I think it's interesting you've come down today, because Sunday we had a protest where our dedicated team was deployed. Stephanie was out there with the National Shop Stewards Union, and that was a real success story for us. The PLOs got out there in their light blue tabards. They worked with the organisers before the event, they worked during on the day, and we'll go back to them for a debrief after as well. And it was really successful. We had to use, you know, low policing numbers for somewhat 400 people in a protest. And just the PLOs themselves, really. So what is key for me to put across is that they are, you know, what they say on the tin, effectively, that we just want them out there to talk to people. And what we've recognised is that we can't just deploy, you know, different people at different times on these bigger operations. People need faces they recognise, they need people they've got a relationship with, a professional relationship that they can develop. And that's what we're hoping to achieve by Stephanie and Mark working in Brighton.
And currently there's no written policy documents regarding the PLO's operations and...
No, there's national guidance that the National Police Improvement Agency set, the NPIA, and we followed quite closely their guidance, and that goes right down to the, you know, wearing the same tabards, etc. And there is policy that's currently being written, which, as with all our policies, will be accessible on the internet. So.
Right.
Nothing to hide, really, with what we're trying to achieve. We really just want to talk to people, and we accept that not everyone will want to talk to us, and we can't win everyone's heart and mind over with this scheme, but we owe it to everyone, really, protesters and the rest of our communities, to make sure that people have the opportunity if they want to come and talk to us.
So since this article in The Guardian was published, do you think that your job is going to be harder now, that maybe some people have read that and there's going to be a breakdown of trust? They're going to see the police officer and not the liaison officer.
I can see that. The officer that was there, it was myself with another officer.
Right.
He's now since left.
Okay.
And so we are in effect a new team. I've never had anything to do with, you know, the intel side of things. I've come from a neighbourhood policing background. I've been on an organised immigration crime project before that, and I've been responsible for that. And for me, in one way, yes, it was negative in the fact that, you know, the way it came across, and also the fact that it's about harassing protesters, and that is not what we're about. That's not our intention.
So how do you think you're going to be able to challenge that image? That
Well, I think in one way it's brought it to the forefront, and actually it's given us the publicity that we need to kind of actually then say, right, this is where we're at. But actually I think through it's about talking to people and having those one-on-one conversations. And also through the success stories we've had, you know, I've got numerous protests coming up that have been speaking to the organisers, that we have been saying, okay, well, this is our plan from a policing point of view. What do you think about that? I very much want protesters and other organisations, groups to get in touch with me and for them to develop my role, because it's not just a police role that we're going to develop. It's something we're going to need to develop with the protesters. And with the marches, and so it's a bit of a learning curve, because we're not always going to get it right, but it's about having those follow-up conversations and good enough connections with event organisers to say, okay, this went wrong on that day, and instead of just shutting off that communication, going, why did it go wrong, what did we do, what did you do that went wrong, and get a balanced perspective and learn from it, and then develop the role from there.
I mean, I was just going to say, the Guardian article itself refers to an event, I think, 3 or 4 months ago. And whilst it is relevant because that was PLOs in action, what we've now done is recognise that we need a dedicated team here, and that part of that team shouldn't have anything to do with, you know, forward intelligence teams. They should be very different roles in what we're trying to achieve. And I know it wouldn't really necessarily be appropriate now, we recognise, for someone who's a forward intelligence officer to also be a protest liaison officer, because we accept that the protest community as a whole would find that a conflict of interest.
Yes.
But also, I think, to be balanced, what I get the impression is that some groups that don't want to communicate with us may be sort of increasing this fear of the PLOs by putting that sort of out there through social media and stuff like that, whereas there isn't actually any, you know, any paranoia required, because all we're trying to do is talk to people, and if people don't want to talk to us, then we won't talk to them. But we need to put that out there and give people the opportunity to do so.
The social media has obviously played a big part. This is what's brought me here today. Lots of activists received an intro letter from yourselves. So, and this has come from Police Monitor, I believe, on Twitter. At least they can't deny making use of pre-existing intelligence and info databases. Are you using pre-existing?
Well, I think it would be ridiculous, really, for us to set up a protest liaison unit to talk to protesters and then not get information and the names of people that we want to contact, because ultimately how do you start dialogue up with people if you're not going to contact the people you know are active in your community protesting? So I don't think we can deny that, and we wouldn't want to, because it's common sense that we speak to the people we know are in our community and are active protesters, because they're the people we want long-term relationships with and active dialogue with, so we can facilitate what they want to achieve.
So as a commander, how do you think you can take this forward now in a positive way?
Well, I think the very fact that we're sat around the table today is positive, and the fact that we're out there on social media, we're out there in the media, and we've got these two dedicated officers, certainly here in Brighton and Hove, and we have other PLOs in Sussex that are willing to sit around the table with anyone and discuss where we want to go with things. So I think we've taken a really big step in recognising, and we're by no means not the first force, so there's lots of organisations that use PLOs, but what we have looked at is the amount of protests we have in Brighton and Hove compared to around the country. We get a really high proportion, and what we need to recognise is that those people are actually part of our community. There are other people in our community that are impacted by protests as well, such as businesses, other residents that might not, and we need to balance the rights of everyone so that we can get some equilibrium there, so people can protest but they can also go about their daily business.
And I think the advantage as well with that advanced dialogue is, like with the disruption to the city, we can put bulletin boards out through the local council, and then they can make the buses aware, they can make the taxis aware, and then they can put plans in place so that, okay, they create diversions, or they let people know that that's what's going to happen during this time and this time. So it just allows everybody that bit of time just to go, okay, well, we've got this march, let's just alter our structure of the city, really.
And Sunday was a great example of that, and Steph and her team did some really good work on Sunday with the National Shop Stewards Network, because they engaged with us from the start, and during the event we were able to, pre-event, we were able to agree a sensible route for them. We could tell buses. We also had the motorcycle event down here, which was 15,000 motorcycles coming to the city on the same day, and I was the commander for both operations. So real big impact on the city. But by speaking to the businesses, the rest of the community beforehand, telling all the transport networks, we managed to keep disruption as minimal as possible, and we still managed to have a really successful, I think, protest for the people who were processing through the city centre. And what is really pleasing for me is I'm able to, after the event, actively go on Twitter, go through media outlets and thank the organisers and thank the protest groups for engaging with us. And I think that they get their, you know, they get some benefit out of that, really, because they're seen by other members of the community as a group with, actually, yeah, they've got a point to make and they're willing to make it in a reasonable manner, so they're more likely to get listened to, in my opinion.
How would your team respond to a situation similar to what myself and my wife Dee here encountered in London, where this was my first encounter with a PLO, was in the Met, and it was for the UK and Cup protest that ended up at Nick Clegg's house. Now, there was no defined destination. They knew where the start point was. They didn't know how many protesters were arriving. They didn't know where they were going. So how would your team manage if something like that happened, where you knew where the start was, but you didn't know where the final target was, so you couldn't pre-inform people, businesses, etc. You had no forward information. How would you manage that sort of during the event and then afterwards?
I think a lot of it is, again, okay, we have the information about the start point. It would be nice, whoever's posted that start point, to be able to enter into dialogue, because they might have a rough idea of, or they know how many from their group might be going, so we can get an estimate of numbers, and then to turn up and again go through the local council and just advise them, okay, we've got this event but we don't know what's happening, we'll keep you up to date on the day, and then literally just speak with people and say, okay, now we're here, do we know which direction we're heading off, do we know which where you're likely to go, first off. Are you likely to be on the road? Are you going to be on the pavement? And just enter into those, you know, just enter into talking, really. And then what we can do is then we can then feed that back and say, okay, they've decided to go off in that direction. They're probably going to leave in about 10 minutes. Let's let the buses know, let the taxis know, let whoever needs to know. And then and we deal with it, you know.
And what about the follow-up to an operation like that?
Well, equally, I think it would be speaking with the protest groups, and also whether there were councillors involved, and maybe following up the councillors and saying, because I know with one of our protests at a certain point, we were saying, oh, well, we've been kettled. We were in the middle of it. The protest liaison officers were in the middle of it, and we were saying, okay, it's only literally to slow them down because they're going a bit fast. So we then literally were in the crowd and going, right, police have moved across there because we're moving a bit fast. They're just trying to slow us down. And then literally it was probably about 15 seconds, 20 seconds. It wasn't very long at all. Those officers then moved, and then people were allowed to walk and say, see, it was only for... But it's to communicate to everybody who's there, this is why we're doing what we're doing, rather than just straight away jump to a conclusion, oh, well, we're being stopped and we're being prohibited from having our say and having our points of view. That's not what we're trying to achieve. And equally, if a protest organiser thinks, hold on a minute, police tactics a bit heavy-handed, you know, we've got too many officers here, what's going on, why have we got so many people, we can then feed that back to the command team and say, look, the crowd are saying, you know, we're doing what we're asked, we're going along this route, we're quite happy, why have you got all these people here? And then we can then maybe go, okay, let's reduce the number of officers that are here. So it's so that we have a proportionate police response, rather than having a crowd that we don't know what's gonna happen, and just hammering it with loads of officers, which is what we've always done. But if we always do it that way, we're never gonna build trust, we're never gonna progress. We need to change that, and we can't change it alone. We have to change it with protesters, with organisers, with marchers. And it's not just about picking organisers, it's about being able to speak to the crowd and say, this is why we're doing it, this is the reason. And if it goes wrong, it's about having those connections back into that crowd to say, well, why did you feel it went wrong? What can we learn from that? And how are we going to develop and take this forward so that it doesn't go wrong again?
And Steph makes a really good point about informing commanders on the ground and from experience as well. That's a really, really useful to have someone there that perhaps from your perspective where you stood, you can't get a full feel for the crowd and the groups, and particularly around differentiating between people within those groups, because I think historically it's very easy to label, oh, they're a protest group. But actually what we're talking about, we're talking about a lot of individuals who are all there with different ideas of, you know, how they want to protest. It's unfortunate that there'll always be a very small minority in some groups that want to cause criminal offences. You know, they'll want to damage property, and we'll deal with those people as robustly as we would normally. You know, it's not an easy option for people who want to commit crime. That's definitely not what's going to occur. But what we need to do is differentiate between, you know, there's 10 people there that are really intent on causing problems and causing crime today, which we will deal with positively. But actually, the other 30 in the group are fine, and the protest liaison officer amongst them and communicating with them. So we need to treat people differently within those groups themselves.
Mm. And what about the unannounced visits that seems to have been the whole spark for this article in The Guardian, for these tweets that have come up with who they say were liaison officers, you know, making an unannounced visit?
I mean, again, that relates to the events 3 months ago before the Jubilee weekend. And that was an extremely busy weekend pre-planning for us. We had a number of multiple events and quite a bit of information about conflicting groups that were coming down to the city. And part of our planning process must be to try and mitigate any groups that are going to cause problems and meet and cause violence and perhaps offences. So I think we really owe it, and the public would expect us to try and negotiate with all parties to make sure that doesn't happen on the day. And part of that is visiting people to open dialogue that we know are active in protest groups. Mm. Similarly, we would go to other people in other groups and speak to them. So going forward from today, what we will never do is, you know, we can't force people to speak to us, and if they don't want to speak to us, they don't have to speak to us, you know. So we would just give them the opportunity and ask that they do for everyone's benefit, really.
Okay, thank you. Have you got anything else you want to just sort of, you know, really underline about the policy of the PLOs just before we finish?
The only thing for me really is what we're looking for is the future, you know, and it's a long-term aim. We're not intending to put two officers into this in Brighton and Hove and change the world overnight. Mm. But what I'm hopeful for long-term is that we can really get some cooperative relationships going with groups that perhaps we hadn't before. We can continue to work with the groups that do work with us, and there is a lot that do work with us, and that's something that I do want to highlight. Mm. We already speak to a number of groups that engage with us. They have successful protests every week, you know, and there's no issue there. But what I'd really like to do is make inroads with some of these groups before that really didn't want to talk to us, and we can't get around the table. And I'd like to extend that invite to anyone, such as yourself, you know, journalists or protest groups that want to come and talk to us, and we're happy to explain that, really. So there will be benefits for us long term, there will be benefits for the community long term, and also for the protest groups probably short term. So we're very much behind this project, and we'll encourage anyone to come and talk to us that wants to, really. Mm.
Stephanie?
Yeah, I just think from more of a personal point of view, I would like to see change happen within the police service. I think we've always done it from a public order perspective, and we've always had the resources, and we've just... It has felt like protesters have been, you know, that they've been stifled in a way. And I think actually this new route I can see is actually it's an opportunity for people to get their points across without being stifled, without the heavy-handed police. But we need that engagement in order to be able to do that. And so therefore it's going to be a little bit of trust from the protesters' side, as well as a little bit of trust from the police side to say, okay, that's what you say you're going to do. We'll go along with that. And I just think as far as with the with some of the protests is we've been there and we've been trying to talk to people, and there's been some people who are really willing to talk to us. Mm. And then you get a small group of people who will put umbrellas in your face, who will try and disrupt that. And then the person turns around and goes, sorry, I can't talk to you. And then they run off. And so therefore I kind of think, you know, there's a little bit of change that needs to happen, and it's going to be about building trust. And I think it's going to be a bit of give and take on both sides. And I'm hoping, you know, if protesters or organisers have ideas about the way that we can change things, like, you know, we've gone onto Twitter, we've done the social media side, you know, let's try that route a little bit more. And that is an area that I'm trying to develop, along with managing, you know, day-to-day protests. But I think it's just going to be a bit of give and take and a bit of time, and we're not always going to get it right, but we are trying to.
Just one more thing that occurs to me, is two PLOs enough?
Well, the two PLOs, Marcus, definitely are dedicated to working in Brighton and Hove, so that what we have here is a lot of small protests every week. We have regular protests, and we need those people to engage with us on those smaller protests as well as the larger ones. But what we'll find on the larger ones is we have a number of other PLOs in the force. And for instance, we had four out on Sunday with that job. So we'll bring those in to support and to help on the day. But what's key is that consistency for us in Brighton and Hove in particular, with Mark and Stephanie, so that people know that they're the go-to people for the protests, really. So. And just following up on one of the other points about, you know, proportionately policing, that's one of the biggest criticisms we get is, you know, having too many officers out on this protest. We're all very peaceful. But the issue for me, and I speak from a commander who has to tactically plan these operations, is that if I know that a group isn't engaging or speaking to us at all, then what else can I base my police numbers on? You know, we have to cover every contingency, because if you do get that small minority of people that want to cause problems and we don't have the resources to react to that, then we see damage happen, we see people get hurt, and the public expect us to be there to deal with that. So by engaging with us, it allows us to more proportionately police the protests.
But it's still policing with consent.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's what the British model is about. And I think that in this country, I'm really proud to be in this service, because people really do have a right to protest, and we really do try and facilitate that. And I don't think that's necessarily shared internationally. You know, people have a much harder time with protests in other countries that you can see from the news every day.
Great, thanks very much. Well, hopefully I'll get a similar feedback from the people that brought this to our attention, really.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get some balance.
And as I say, our doors are open. If people want to come and talk to us, we're perfectly happy to come to talk to them, you know, just to allay any fears they have or concerns. Really, we just police officers there that want to talk to people.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time.